ESG dehys.
Just say it like you're saying it.
I would never just say ESG dehys.
Jordan, what are we going to talk about today?
Today we're talking about ESG dehys.
Mystery brackets.
That was on a whole different level than what Jordan started. You're setting tone. Set the tone, Jordan.
Today we're talking about ESG dehys.
Mystery brackets.
And 3-inch mechanical valve washout.
It's oil and gas. Let's talk about it. Hello and welcome to Stuff You Should Know About Oil and Gas Production. We are a podcast brought to you by Kimray. You can visit us at kimray.com to see our quick tips, training, troubleshooting, videos, other resources. My name is Curtis. I'm here today with my friends Jordan Moore and Kyle Andrews. How's it going, fellas?
Good.
How's it going, friend?
Bueno? Yeah, we're friends, right?
Yeah.
Not just work friends, real friends.
Absolutely.
This is a customer questions episode that we do routinely. And so we've got 3 customer questions we're going to jump into today, unpack and answer for you, and hopefully this benefits you, dear listener. Jordan, you've got 2, so I'm going to start with you.
Okay.
With your, you got a big one to start out with.
Yeah.
So let me see if I can set you up for this one, tee you up well. So this is a company they make dehydration units, and they're looking to get more emissions friendly and be aware of the emissions game. And right. So. This customer contacted us looking for information about our glycol pumps,
right.
Electric, energy exchange, gas consumption, and had some questions along those lines.
That's right. Yeah, they actually reached out to one of our account managers in the Houston area.
Danny Isbell, shout out.
That's right. Shout out, Danny, if you're listening. Needing to know about gas consumption rates and what we meant by gas consumption when it comes to the energy exchange glycol pump, firstly. And then secondly, what's the difference when it comes to gas consumption between the energy exchange glycol pump and the electric pump? You know, is there a difference?
Yeah.
We state that the electric pump is zero consumption. What do we mean by that? So it was kind of a back and forth situation, but really the 2 things I want to like cover here is what we mean when we say gas consumption when it comes to the energy exchange glycol pump and how that differs from the electric pump. Essentially, what I told them was the energy exchange glycol pump requires a certain amount of gas, so to speak, to operate. The electric pump does not require any gas, and that's what we mean by consumption. I think their concern was they're considering ESG stuff. They hear consume. They think, okay, well, we're going to be venting something. We're going to be burning something, you know, and they were concerned, obviously, with that being a factor that they need to consider in engineering an ESG-friendly dehy. So a lot of this was me stepping through, well, more language and how we define consumption when it comes to our glycol pump and why we provide those rates for the pump and what's different between that pump and the electric one.
So the electric one, did they find some language that suggested some consumption rates on there?
No, oh, okay. They were making assumptions.
I see.
So they're using
assumptions about consumption.
The assumptions about consumption, which is not something you want to do with ESG stuff. And they're basically just needing to find out like how much flash gas is going to happen in the dehy system. And they get into the energy exchange pump technical documents. They see the charts that say gas consumption. So they're just trying to figure out like an equivalent, so to speak, for the electric pump. And I kind of had to walk through like what those rates actually are. They're there so that we know that the pump won't stall out, like how much gas you need moving through the pump. Essentially, if you have a certain rate moving through on one end, it'll be the same on the other end. The energy exchange glycol pump just needs a certain percentage and a certain amount to operate. Is that all right, Kyle?
So, if I understand it correctly, if you set up an energy exchange, it's the gas in the system that's going to push the cylinder back and forth.
That's the motive force. So, like, it's exchanging the energy or the pressure in the system to drive the pump. With the electric pump, there's an electric motor that's driving that. So, it doesn't need that pressure, which allows it to be used in, you know, lower pressure applications and different things. But I think another important distinction to make, and you mentioned flash gas, there's a difference between our what we categorize as like our consumed gas or gas consumption by the energy exchange and gas flash gas or gas breakout. So like there is a certain amount of consumed or needed gas volume to operate the pump.
Even the electric one?
No, okay. Just the energy exchange. And gas breakout is like once that pressure is taken off the gas, there's a pressure drop that happens inside the pump. That's why there's always or should be always a flash separator downstream of the pump, because that's taking that gas that is flashing back into vapor coming off of high pressure into low pressure. It's flashing into vapor. But there's also the gas or the consumed gas that we're saying is not already entrained or it's not in liquid form, if that makes any sense. So the gas consumed by the energy exchange pump is different from like any breakout gas or flash gas.
Yeah. And I think they were putting the two things together and trying to use those charts to do some sort of calculation. Mm-hmm. And then even going as far as using it, trying to use it for the electric driven pump. Right. So it was really just a question of like language, like what do we mean when we say that? And me just going through and explaining what exactly is going on there. And once we arrived to an understanding of what we mean by gas consumption with the energy exchange pump, then we kind of got all squared away.
And I've heard people say gas like consumption, like the pump is like consuming this gas. Like where is it going? Where is it going? It's eating it, right?
Yeah.
No, it stays within the system.
Yeah.
It's you're able to capture that or you know, take that gas back off, put it in a sales line or use it for supply. It's not going away or it's not just going into atmosphere.
But the pump itself doesn't vent. That's
correct.
Gonna be vented at a valve or something else somewhere else.
Right. Yeah, there is no direct emissions that come from our pump if it's operating normally. Now if it's got a hole in it or an O-ring blue or whatever. I mean, there's potential, but operating normally, there's no emissions from our pump.
Do you know what they decided to do?
No, I actually did. I did not hear the end of this one. Yeah. A lot of this, I was dealing with Danny, our account manager, and he was dealing with the end user. And I kind of play a support role a lot of the time.
Well, if that customer's listening, let Jordan know. Give him a call. Let him know what happened.
And also go check out previous episodes where we interviewed Tim Rickle, DI expert.
Yeah.
He'll get you some info. Jordan, your next question is about a bonnet bracket used to mount the I2P. I'll let you take it from there.
Okay, so essentially we had a customer submit a photo with a tape measure and simply asked, is this a Kimray bracket? Mm. And I thought, man, what an easy softball question. So how I knew instantly that it wasn't a Kimray bracket is because it is not powder coated. This one had obviously been fabricated third party. Now I also verified it, not just with the powder coating, but also with the dimensional information that we have with all of our brackets. It wasn't one of ours dimensionally. It wasn't the right sizes that we use. So it was some third party fabricated bracket. But I thought, you know, that's such an easy question to answer there. If it's not red, if it's not powder coated, it's not a bracket that we put out.
Yeah. So they probably had follow-up questions, but it wasn't for us.
Right, exactly.
The bracket's not working correctly.
So I've gotten a similar picture of a different component, not a bracket, but it was asked like, hey, like, is this one of our pieces? And so I'm zooming in on the picture and I laughed because if you zoomed in a little bit on the picture, there was a made in China stamp.
There you go.
And I was another, like, no, that's definitely
negative. Another telltale.
Ours. Yeah.
Oh, That's a great hint. Yeah. So if it's not red, if it's stamped something like made in Taiwan or China or something like that, it's probably not going to be a Kimray part, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
All right, Kyle, you've got a question that we talk about a lot, we think about a lot, that a lot of producers are dealing with, which is sand in their valves and abrasive elements coming through their fluid. And so this is a mechanical valve, right, that developed a hole from sand.
Yeah, so this actually happened just before I walked over here to record. Some guys in our repair shop came over and were showing me pictures of a 3-inch lever-operated dump valve that came through, had a hole in the body. The internals of the valve were all washed out, obviously due to the sand. because there's still a bunch of sand in the valve body. And so they were asking me, we know what caused this. It was the sand, but what can a customer do to help prevent this? What materials, you know, what should we suggest to them for this? And so I just walked them through, you know, looking at not only the sand, but also like what pieces were wearing out. Do we offer alternative materials for those internal pieces? You know, harder materials, coated bodies.
Mm-hmm. Was it a through body?
No, so it's angled.
Okay.
So nothing that we could change there. One thing I would suggest to them, and this is the case, I would say, with most 3-inch bodies, at least here in the MidCon or in our area, if somebody's using a 3-inch lever-operated dump valve or mechanical valve, most likely it's oversized. I don't know of a well, unless it's a multi-well pad with, you know, several wells coming into a single piece of equipment. But usually a 3-inch valve is overkill. And so with an oversized valve...
Yeah, because just logically, I would go, oh, bigger size, so there's more room for error. And if it's, maybe it comes through at a less speed, less
correct. So like, valve. You know, even with initial production, probably a 3-inch valve may be sized correctly with some kind of safety factor, which a lot of engineers have to plan for.
Sure.
But then once production drops off after a few months, then it's just way too big.
Oversized. So what's the problem with an oversized valve?
So think of like a garden hose without anything on the end. You turn on the water, there's a nice smooth stream of water coming out. But if you start to pinch the hose or put your thumb over the end, you're creating a smaller space for that same amount of flow rate to have to get out. And so higher velocities, you know, it'll start shooting really far if you put your thumb over it. It's the same kind of thing. So think of a valve opening or the internals of a valve. If it's all the way open, your thumb's off of it, right? It's flowing nicely. But if it's just barely cracking open and there's a little sliver where all that sand and water is trying to get through, the velocities are much higher and it's going to cut out that valve or wash it out even faster.
It's a little ironic that an oversized valve is actually pinching and creating a greater velocity.
It is a little counterintuitive, isn't it?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, so with let's say a smaller valve, so a 2-inch valve, to get that same amount of flow rate across, it has to open up further, which just creates a larger opening for that to...
Less velocity.
Right, and this is with mechanical valves. If you were to use pneumatic valves in this instance, a larger valve may not be a terrible idea, because if you have snap controls, it's snapping all the way open and then it's going closed. In a throttle application, though, definitely you don't want any kind of oversized valve.
Yeah.
Because it will just crack open just enough to get the correct amount of flow rate across it, and it won't open up anymore.
So in this scenario, our team across the street in our repair shop is working on this valve.
Yep.
And they're going to come back to the customer, maybe with Will or the account manager.
Correct. Say, so I gave them some questions to ask, just about flow rate, pressures, so we could size the valve to see if it is sized correctly or if it's oversized. And then we'll probably come back with a suggestion of smaller valve or even different materials on the internals. And really it's up to the customer, because they could go either way. They could replace a valve every 4 months.
Yeah.
Or they could put harder materials in and have it last 8 months.
What are some of those harder materials?
So you can do nickel-plated bodies, Endurobond-coated bodies, hardened, heat-treated materials for the internals. But again, you're just prolonging the inevitable, right? It's eventually going to wash out until all that sand cleans up.
Yeah. Very cool. Anything else, gentlemen?
That's all I've got.
That's all I've got.
Oh, man, I enjoyed it. Friends, we will hope you enjoyed it as well. Listener, we'll catch you next time on Stuff You Should Know About Oil and Gas Production.